on this renewable phases in classical B-stars.
All right, thank you. So I'll be talking about disk loss and disk renewal phases in classical BE stars, and this work has been done in collaboration with a number of folks. Karen and John Bjorkman at Toledo, Alex Garchafi and his group at Sao Paulo, my awesome undergrad who did most of this work, who's now at Victoria, Zach Draper, and some folks at Wisconsin. So we've heard a lot about this already at this meeting, but a common theme that we've been hearing about is what mechanism or mechanisms are responsible for actually feeding classical BE star disks. And arguably, if you want to study that process, one laboratory to go look and investigate that is at systems that are actively gaining or losing their disks, where their mass accretion rates are turning on or off. All right, so then for the rest of this talk, just kind of a definition, we've already heard this already, that systems that are actively gaining or losing their disks, I mean that they're losing all observational signatures of their disks and going to effectively a photospheric level, or going from the photospheric level and gaining signatures of a disk again. And some open questions in this area, I mean, first is how often do disks actively gain and lose their disks? And surprisingly, this number is all over the map. Jeannie McSwain did some really nice work a few years ago in the Southern Hemisphere open clusters and found transient BE to regular BE rates from 0 up to 75%. So arguably, it'd be interesting to try and increase that sample size and see if that range becomes more constrained. Is there a characteristic time scale for disk loss and disk renewal events? And again, what is triggering these things? All big questions, none of which I'll answer with this talk. So all the data that I'll be presenting came from the HBOL spectropolarimeter, which lived for a long time at the University of Wisconsin. It died around 2005. But like a good zombie, it has been resuscitated and now lives at the University of Toledo at the Ritter Observatory. And one system that we've seen from a long period of observations, long baseline of observations, experienced a disk loss event is 60 sig. So you can see right here in the bottom plot, this is H alpha equivalent width as a function of time. It clearly had a nice disk and more or less monotonically decreased into a quiescent state. And since this Julian date, it's gone back to grow a disk again. But that monotonic decrease took about 2.4 years. And we showed in a paper in 2010 that if you make this assumption about the a diffusion time scale of that disk and make some approximations of where the polarization is coming from, you can back out an estimate of the alpha viscosity parameter, and for 60 sig, just from that dissipation time scale, we worked out alpha to be 0.14. And as John showed yesterday in his summary talk, pi square looks a lot messier, but it again had strong evidence of a disk which dissipated over a period of about 6.5 years. And that dissipation was interrupted a few times by mass being re-injected in the disk, but effectively, in the 2000s, it was in a diskless stage. So that's another example from long-term monitoring of a disk that completely had dissipated. And we did more detailed analysis of the polarization properties of these two specific systems and looked at their properties in polarization color diagrams, polarization color loop diagrams, which John mentioned yesterday. So, for example, for 60 sig, I'm plotting data highlighted in green for pi squared data plotted in red. What you're seeing in the middle panel is the polarization change across the Balmer jump as a function of the V-band polarization. And over time, these data make a nice little loop pattern. If you just look at the broadband polarization, for example, the B-band polarization divided by the U-band polarization, you get the same type of loop structure. And again, the same loop structure was observed during pi square's dissipation event as well. And as John mentioned yesterday, these polarization color loops are analogous to photometry loops that have been previously observed and reported in the literature. For example, DeWitt had a nice paper, DeWitt and collaborators had a nice paper in 2006 about this. And there's been some, you know, from an observer, my observer standpoint, some really excellent time-dependent modeling going on by several groups. Robbie Helen and Carol had a nice paper about this last year, and Xavier had a paper about this this year. But these loops can be explained by turning on and off the first order, the mass loss that's happening from the central star. So that's what's being shown in the bottom panel right here. The polarization is a function of time. And the mass decrease from the central star is modeled as a simple step function. So it's on up until point one, then the mass loss is turned off up to point two, point three. Point three, the mass loss is turned back on again in a step function. If you look at the effects of that in a polarization color loop diagram, at point one, when you turn the disk decretion, the disk feeding off, you go down in the loop, the polarization Balmer jump, and the V-band polarization decreases. When you turn back on the disk feeding, you go back up in loop space. So again, one way you can reproduce that behavior is by turning on and off the disk feeding rate. There was a second paper in 2013 by Robbie and Carol that also showed that you can produce this type of effect just by having spiral density perturbations in your disk as well. So that was behavior for disk loss events. We've been exploring this diagnostic in other situations and comparing this against models. And this is some model simulations of the behavior for polarization color loop diagrams for different base densities as a function of time. So it's 30 years of disk feeding followed by 30 years of turning off your disk feeding event. So what you'll see is that very quickly in the first year, you'll get close to reaching a saturation point in the polarization Balmer jump. From years roughly, you know, several to 30, not much happens. If you turn off the disk feeding, you rapidly decrease down in polarization color loop space. And so effectively, that this polarization Balmer jump saturates relatively quickly. And what you can also see is as you change the base density from, for example, 6 to 3 to 1 times 10 to the negative 11th, the amplitude of your loops also decreases. Alrighty, well then we compare this against observations and specifically against some disks that were in steady state for a long period of time, the first being phi per. For 15 years, it effectively has a nice well-behaved disk. In polarization, it's been has relatively constant intrinsic V-band polarization. If we look at the system in a polarization color loop diagram, well, effectively we see that saturation happening. The system is stalled at a high Balmer jump polarization and a high V-band polarization. So we're seeing this pause happening. So that's good. Models and theory are agreeing there. Looking at another relatively stable system, gamma CAS. Again, arguably over 15 years, it's been relatively well behaved in its H alpha equivalent width. The V-band polarization, it's also been constant over roughly 15 years of time. If we look at the system as a function of time in polarization color loop diagram space on the right, again, we're seeing a pause happening. The system is at a relatively high Balmer jump ratio and a moderate V-band polarization, and it's just hanging out. Things get more interesting as you increase the densities of these systems and change their inclination to more edge-on cases. So this is a busy diagram, but it's plotting the polarization across the Balmer jump as a function of V-band polarization for different spectral types. And effectively starting off with turning on the disk feeding, going up to point one in the diagram, right here, disk feeding is still on. Disk feeding is still on, and you actually see a decrease in the polarization across the Balmer jump to point two. Point two is where the disk feeding is turned off, and you circulate back down to a native state. As you change to later spectral types, again, turn on disk feeding, you'll get an increase in the polarization across the Balmer jump. At some point, that'll saturate. Disk feeding is still on, but you'll see a decrease in the polarization across the Balmer jump. You turn off the disk feeding, and you get a little loop up and back to a native state. And the interpretation of this is that you're getting absorption, post-scattering absorption, from this dense disk. So you need sufficiently high densities and the right inclination angle. So that was models. If we go to our data for SciPer, for example, which showed a nice disk growth event over a period of about 5 years. So if you look at this disk growth event in polarization color loop diagram space, well, we see a nice increase in the polarization across the Balmer jump. It reaches a saturation point. And then while the disk is still being fed, that polarization across the Balmer jump drops back down. Yep. And so the interpretation of that, again, is that we're getting post-scattering absorption of Balmer jump photons. And just as a note, you know, there was also at a later time period, a significant but incomplete disk loss event, and we can set an upper limit on alpha on the viscosity parameter from that disk loss event. Already one more system experiencing a disk growth event, 40 Libra, again over several periods of disk growth. We see the polarization Balmer jump increase, reach a saturation point, and then drop back down. Indicating that the system, which is nearly edge-on, has a very dense disk. And you're seeing post-scattering absorption of those Balmer jump photons. And just as a note, this is showing the trend of the polarization color loop diagram as a function of spectral type. And the actual slope that you expect to see will change with spectral type, from B0 on the bottom here to B5 up on top. And that change is related to the bound free opacity changes as you increase in spectral type or go to later spectral type. Something which hasn't been modeled in detail yet, but John Bjorkman alluded this to it in his talk yesterday, is that in some systems we've seen evidence of really rapid variability in PCL diagrams. So this is 28 SIG, which was monitored for on a quasi-nightly basis for a period of time around 2000. If you look at it in the V-band polarization, it's kind of boring. Nothing seems to be happening. If you look at the polarization Balmer jump diagram, there are three rapid up and down movements separated by 24 and 18 days respectively. We think those rapid changes in the polarization across the Balmer jump is indicative of stochastic mass injections into the inner disk. So it's exactly what John said yesterday about the inner disk being able to respond quickly to mass injections. I won't talk about this much, especially since I don't have much time, and Carol will be talking about this more in her talk, but we did look for evidence for polarization color loops coming from density waves in our system. Again, Robbie and Carol had a nice paper on this in 2013, and they predicted a PCL behavior. Unfortunately, we didn't see that. What we might have seen, though, is some evidence for periodic behavior in the intrinsic polarization in the V-band. And this was interesting. It was quite similar to what was shown in the last talk for Zeta Tau. So that's nice. And we looked also for predicted signatures from Robbie's paper and the polarization position angle. We see variations, but nothing is coherent as a function of phase. So in terms of a summary, so PCL diagrams can provide diagnostics of disk growth and loss events. The V-band polarization is primarily mapping the total scattering that's happening in the disk. The polarization across the Balmer jump primarily depends on the hydrogen bound free opacity. So this will this depends on the disk density and also its spectral type. And we've now compared this diagnostic for disk loss events and also for disk growth events and boring stable disks, and seeing a good match between observations and theory, at least at the qualitative level. And given some priors now, what this implies is that given priors on the inclination and spectral types of these individual objects, you can use this diagnostic to put constraints on the base density, the mass decretion rate, and alpha for these disks. In the last minute, where are we going in the future? So we really need to do detailed modeling of now some of these individual systems. We can get estimates of their base density from the maximum polarization that's observed. We reported some tentative values in our 2014 paper. The time scale for loops in the PCL diagram can give you information on the mass decretion rate. And combining these two should give us constraints on the alpha parameter. We'd also like to increase our frequency of observing some system based on what we've seen for 28 sig. We'd like to return to this question of how prevalent are these disk loss, disk renewal events, and we're approaching this with several different observational techniques. So I'll leave it there. Yeah, so for example, for the two systems we've studied in detail in the 2010 paper, PiQuery and 60 Sig, there was actually a time lag between the decrease in the decline of H alpha versus what we see in the polarization. And this was interpreted as an inside out disk loss event, which is consistent with what John said yesterday in his summary talk.
Some of them without the not all the cases with this
beautiful. Like some of that, for example. Right. Remember, especially for this system, since it's an earlier spectral type, you're diagnosing different parts of your disk. Right, so what you're observing in H alpha versus what you're observing in the V band polarization and the Balmer jump polarization really depends on your spectral type. So that will affect things a lot.
Quick follow up on that. So the V band polarization is formed over radii of the inner part of the disk within two stellar radii. H alpha is over a much, much broader area of the disk. So you can get big changes in V without really doing much to H alpha. Interesting, isn't that? When it is correlated, that's in a way kind of surprising.
Yes?
I want to add to that comment another comment, which is that we actually see in cases where all the H alpha emission has essentially gone away, it's as if there is no disk there, and yet the polarization is still burbling around at a very low level. So
yep.
The activity in the polarimetric variations is not completely gone, even though all the emission traces in H alpha are gone.
That's a good point, yep.
So you are dissipating the disk from the inside out, I guess, no?
Yeah, that was the interpretation, yep. Yeah. Yep.
You made an equivalent width of H alpha. Is your spectral resolution high enough that you can see at what velocity the polarizing material appears?
For the spectral polarimetry data, unfortunately, no. The resolution is... is it that good? Okay. I was going to say about 500. it's unfortunately too poor for that.
But Dietrich, we do have, in many cases, we have at least contemporaneous higher resolution
products. That's what I basically meant.
Yeah, like resolution of 26,000. Yep.
But these measurements, I think, John, correct me if I'm wrong, were made on the basis of the H4 data.
Yep, we supplemented for a few cases, but it hasn't been done systematically yet.
Okay, we have to move on. Thanks, John, again.